Hey friends, welcome back. Today, Brian Montes is joining us, and he is a seasoned business and people operations expert with over 15 years of experience in the Fortune 500 and the startup world. He worked alongside a founder and CEO, leading a company from a handful of employees to over 150 employees and $100 million in revenue. After experiencing the failure of his company due to the CEO's lack of leadership and disregard for their employees, Brian knew the world of work needed to evolve. So he launched Scalosity Works, and now he provides HR advisory services, technologies, and a full suite of HR solutions to transform company cultures into environments that candidates love to work at. Brian also launched the Entrepreneur to Employer podcast to help employers make Mondays matter. Today, he and I will discuss questions that you must ask at the interview to make sure that you love the offer you accept. Let's get started with today's episode.
Well, it's great to have you back today, Brian. I know the last episode that we had is literally one of the most listened to episodes, especially when it comes to, you know, hearing from experts in human resources. And so welcome back again.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Absolutely. So we've got kind of a treat for y'all today. We are talking about the selection process, but more so the fact that, you know, both employees and employers are really interviewing each other. And so both folks are involved in the decision on whether or not this is going to move forward. And many times, you know, we go in as candidates thinking we are the beggar and they're going to tell us if they want us or not. And like, it's a show like The Bachelor or something. And that's just not true.
Those days are over, right?
Yeah. Those days are definitely over. And we're now in a time where as an employee, not only do you have the option to be selective, but you should, you almost have the responsibility to be selective in order to have kind of a good fit wherever you go. And so Brian, the last time we were on the episode, We talked about a couple different things involving like getting hired and what that would look like from both sides of the table. So before we get started with today's episode, before we go too deep into it, tell us a little bit about what you do to refresh our minds. And then if anything has changed on your end since our last episode.
Sure. So I'm the founder of Scalosity Works. We're an HR advisory firm. So we work with companies that typically have between 15 and 50 employees, and we come in as that HR partner, kind of a done with you model, if you will. And then we've recently launched the Proactive HR membership subscription because we have smaller employers or solopreneurs getting ready to hire employee number one and beyond. And it's scary to hire your first employee. There's a lot that can go wrong. And there's certain things that need to be followed. And so we have found that there's a real need for helping solopreneurs, business owners, founders get ready to hire their first employee so that they can scale their company and build an amazing team. So we've also launched the Proactive HR membership just for that.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, nowadays you hear so many people going into online business, but what you may not hear is that there's those folks who have been in online business for so long now, and they started hiring employees and they ran into all these issues. And so it's good to know that you now have a service to help all of them to kind of, for some, actually hire their first employee. And I'm assuming that for others, you kind of help do a little bit of that cleanup work that might need to be done.
Yeah. In the Proactive HR, it's community plus coaching plus playbooks, right? So we're there to coach and guide that business owner on how to build their recruitment system, how to build an onboarding program, what the first 10 days of training should look like, right? So we help create those roadmaps along the way. And then of course, on the HR advisory side, yes, we can come in and help clean up things if things happen to go awry. So yes, we've got both sides of the fence covered.
Oh gosh, that's awesome. So you are particularly qualified, right, to have these types of conversations.
So they tell me.
I think so. And I think that's why the last episode was so highly, listened to, so highly downloaded. So on this episode, we are looking at this whole concept of both employees and employers interviewing each other to really kind of as a relationship, build a relationship throughout the process, and then come to the right conclusion, because we spend most of our time at work.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of thought we would do this a little bit differently and we would each bring some questions to the table. And so I will let you as our honored guest, go ahead and start with the first question that you think should be asked at the interview or during the selection process.
Thank you. Well, and I'm glad we chose this topic because when you started our discussion, but to your point, you know, gone are the days where it's that employee going into an interview and it being a one-way conversation or an interrogation sometimes, mm-hmm. Right? And so gone are those days, because what has to happen in the evolution of the hiring process, of the recruitment process, is that there needs to be a due diligence and a thought process behind both parties. The employer saying, okay, is this person right for our organization? Are they going to bring the type of value and skills and what we need to grow? And that, you know, that candidate needs to be looking at this organization and the employer and saying, okay, is this where I want to spend the next chapter of my career? How does this benefit me? Is this where I want to be and spend my time? Because at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, you know, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, anything under a year, it's a waste of the employee's time and the employer's time. So there's hard dollars associated with decisions, you know, hiring decisions that don't pan out. So I always encourage candidates to ask questions, right? Don't be afraid to ask questions. And I coach the employers that we work with to be prepared to answer questions. Because if you're not prepared to answer questions from your candidates, it's a red flag to them, right? Or if you dodge them or whatever. So there's a lot of different questions that candidates can ask, but I have a few that I want employers to really be ready to answer. Mm-hmm. And that first one is, you know, be ready to answer if your company has had a rough patch recently, right? Have you had any major challenges or hurdles that have come up recently? And by recently, past 6 months, a year, mm-hmm. 2 years, maybe. And more importantly, how did you overcome or adapt to those challenges, right? I mean, we know every company had challenges during COVID, but there's new challenges that are starting to face the business world. Mm-hmm. And so from an employee's perspective, they should ask that question, because you want to see that response. You want to see how they handled it, how they diagnosed the problem, how they analyzed it, and what they did to be resilient, because the business is only going to survive and thrive through recessions, through pandemics, through downturns, through whatever challenges they face, if they're ready, if the leadership team has the ability to adapt and be resilient. So that's what an employee needs to be, a potential employee needs to be looking for, mm-hmm. because if they're going to work somewhere that isn't able to adapt and pivot, the business could die, right? It's not going to be sustainable.
And that leaves you as an employee in a very bad situation. And it can be very, very quickly. You know, there's some websites where, actually a site where you can see a company that's going to have a layoff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're required to give a 60-day notice.
So if they're a large employer. Yeah. The WARN notice. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And so as employees, like, we need to know, you know, that information. But before you're an employee, it's kind of, I would look on that site and say, have mm-hmm. they had a layoff in the last year? And then kind of say, hey, I've noticed there's been something else in the last year. Can you explain to me kind of what occurred? Mm-hmm. How are we avoiding that from happening? Because you're hiring me and I don't want to be back on the market in 60 days, you know?
Right.
So I can definitely understand that being a big one that often isn't asked, because one of the things that you and I talked about is that as employees or potential employees, we come to the table ready to answer these questions. And we're so nervous, we don't do any of the grilling ourselves. Yeah. Like, we don't ask those
questions. We're not interviewing the employer.
We're not interviewing the employer. And that's like the whole point of the interview process.
Right.
And so one of the questions that I had is a little bit different than yours. And I think we're going to kind of go back and forth here. But one of the questions that I had was, how does the company foster innovation and encourage employees to contribute new ideas? Because oftentimes, you know, you go into a position and you realize that there's a lot of micromanaging, or, you know, we're going deeper and deeper into, you know, knowledge work, and your value is directly connected to how much knowledge work is involved in your position with all the technology that's automating everything else. And so if you're not giving the ability to think creatively, the autonomy to, you know, mm-hmm. innovate, to change things, to question the status quo or whatnot, then how are you supposed to gain the skills that you need, let's be honest, for your next position?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a great question, because it does start to give you some insight as to whether or not you're going to be micromanaged in that role, whether you're going to have autonomy. And, you know, because while compensation is absolutely important, people also want to be challenged in the work that they do. Mm-hmm. Right. So if that innovation culture doesn't exist there, that challenging, you know, the work might get mundane and boring, which, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like. They want to be challenged. They want to, you know, have to make those accomplishments and push through them. So.
Oh, yeah. and just stay on top of, especially in technology, you have to stay on top of things. And if your job, if your career isn't pushing you towards that cutting edge, you can become outdated very quickly.
Yeah, very true.
Very quickly. Wow. Okay. All right. Let's see. What other questions do we have here? Do you want to share your second question?
Sure. So the other question that I tell employers to make sure that they're ready to answer, and this is good because in order for them to be ready to hire, they should do this. They should answer this question themselves before they even go to recruit, right? And that question is, what are the KPIs for my role? And what is the definition of success, right? Because if it's not clearly mapped out, this is what success looks like in your role. This is what you're measured against. This is what milestones look like, progress, however you define it. Then how do you expect that person to succeed, right? If you're not crystal clear about the role, the responsibilities, and what defines success, the waters get muddy very quickly. And all we're doing is setting somebody up to fail.
Gosh, that's a big point you just made, because as they tell you what the markers are for success, you want to be looking for things like, is that actually within the control of the scope of my job?
Right.
You know, yeah. Because oftentimes it's like, oh, we didn't make such and such revenue. And you're like, I am not even in marketing. I'm not even in sales. Like, I'm in the manufacturing process. Like, I don't understand how you're asking me to, you know. So it helps you to see what their thinking process is as far as how you are valuable as an employee, how they believe that you move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be like, okay, look at the description. And it'll tell you, A, if it's within your scope, and B, if you're being hired to do something that's not actually on the job posting.
Right. And third, are one of the KPIs, is it truly out of reach, right? I mean, there's stretch goals, things like that, which are great, but is it also a realistic KPI, right? If it's not grounded in some type of, you know, business logic and you can't achieve it, then to your point, it's out of your control and it's unachievable. Right. So it's another red flag.
That's great, because you could look at it in the job description and be like, okay, yeah, that's within the scope of work, but it is outside of what is reasonable. That was a great point.
Yeah. That's, you know, like a new salesperson. I want $1 million in new sales in 90 days. Pretty much impossible. I don't care how skilled or how seasoned they are. Right. Yeah. There's a ramp up period.
Yeah.
So, you know, employers have to set realistic KPIs, because you also want to set up realistic KPIs that give the new employee some early wins, right? Because those early wins are going to build confidence and get their momentum going. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. And you also, just heads up, this gives you, you know, a little bit of an insight as to what's going to be expected at that 90-day evaluation that everyone's worried about, you know.
Bingo.
So it's like if you're already like, yeah, that's not going to happen, then you kind of have a sense of where you're going.
Yep.
That's good. That's a great question. Let's see. So the second question I have here is sort of on the flip side of that. And that is that you can ask your employer to provide examples of recent employee success stories or recent employees' career progression to get a sense of, you know, how do employees move up in the ranks? At some companies, the only way to move up is to move out. And then at other companies, they very much promote from within, and you might see a posting and it's rare to get something from the outside.
Right.
So that's one of the questions I thought was important.
That's a great question. And I lived that, right? My first job out of college was with a Fortune 500 company, and I climbed the ranks there to a certain level, spent 10 years working there. And when I turned down a promotion to our division headquarters in the Midwest, simply because it didn't make financial sense for us to relocate from California, as soon as I turned that down, I was done. It was time for me to move out. Right. So, you know, at that big Fortune 500 company, either you moved up the ranks or you stayed where you were at and you went no further. Wow. So, yeah. So that's a great question to ask.
Even as you're moving up, right? Because in your case, it's like you move up or you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So you got to consider all the options, right? Am I going to be able to move up if I want to?
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, is that going to be an expectation of me in the future?
Right.
That's a good one. And are you willing to travel? All those questions come along
sure.
with that.
Oh, yeah.
Travel's huge. Awesome. What about you? What's your next question on here?
All right. The next question that I know I was thinking about it. A really important question that should be asked, and the employer needs to be ready to answer it, is why is the job vacant? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's a brand new position, so if this is a company that's been a solopreneur and they're getting ready to hire employee number one, that's an easy answer, right? It's vacant because it's never been filled, right? The position's never been created before.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're established and, you know, that position's open, what's the reason it's open? Somebody moved on to a different opportunity. We burn through people like crazy. Not, you know, not that an employer is going to say that directly, yeah, but those are the things that you have to listen for as a candidate, is how is that question answered? Because if that role is vacant because, you know, you sense that they're burning through people or they're burning them out, or it's a unrealistically high pressure environment, or there's cultural issues that people are just like, nope, we're out of here. Right. Those are what you want to kind of, you want to listen for and read between the lines to determine why is the job truly vacant, mm-hmm, you know, or it could be because we promoted the person that was in it and now we need a backfill. Right. So there's answers that are great and there's answers that are red flags.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like one of those situations where you're like, pay attention not only to the words, but also to the demeanor. Like,
bingo. Yes. Read between the lines.
Like, you should go on those YouTube channels where they have those, behavioral analysts.
Yes.
Right. And you get to see little quirks and little changes, like, oh, this person's eyes were shifting and that means X, Y, Z, you know?
Right.
Be careful how much you read into it, but you do want to pay attention to those things.
Yeah.
Awesome. That was good. So going along with very similar question, actually, not just looking at kind of why is this position vacant, but in the same line, you want to read between the lines on this question. And that's, can you describe the team dynamics and collaboration across different departments? Because one of the things that I think is prevalent in almost every organization on some level is that we all work in silos.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more collaboration and the more positive team dynamics that there are, like, the better you're going to be at doing your job, but you can get a pulse on, like, exactly how much the silo environment is present just by asking that question and just sitting back and like listening to all the stories, and hopefully more than one person answers, because then you get to see how a manager and a colleague, right, are going to respond.
Right. That's a great question. And because, as we know, silos kill innovation. Going back to your first question, right? Silos, yeah, kill innovation. So, oh, excellent, yeah, question.
And we all just get stuck on, this is what, mm-hmm, I have to do today. And so that's what I'm going to do today. And that's it.
And I'm going home.
And I'm going home. That's literally what it turns into. And, you know, you had mentioned KPIs earlier. And this is one thing that has really irked me at some organizations that shall remain unnamed, is that KPIs can sometimes be built for the process, not necessarily for, like, the actual improvement. It's more of like, we have to do KPIs, so everybody go and do your KPIs, but they're, yeah, not really mean as much to the actual process.
It's more of a checklist item.
Yes. Which, yeah, just
look at us, we're doing our KPIs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we've got all these measures, yeah, in here. And I'm like, great. Does that measure directly relate to, yeah, like, the overall mission? Does it directly show, like, your value as an employee? Does it, you know, I just, yeah.
And employers, if you're listening to this episode, do not create 40 KPIs for a job. That's it's just nuts, right? I just helped a client hire her first business development executive. Yeah. We did 3 KPIs. That's it. Total. Just keep it simple. Yeah. Don't overcomplicate it.
No. I mean, if you think about it, there's this calendar that we have in a different organization, but it's like the one thing. And so it's like, here's the one thing you have to get done on this day. And here's the one thing you have to get done. And so this allows us to sort of hyper-focus on, mm-hmm, the things that really matter. Because if we're busy trying to do all, 40, you said, 40 KPIs, yeah, none of them are going to get done.
Bingo. So, none of them. Yet another red flag for candidates to look at.
Oh, gosh, this is great. Let's see. So my fourth question is, I would be interested in asking the company to describe the company's strategic planning process and basically how decisions are made from the higher level all the way, you know, how input mm-hmm. is taken at all levels, and then how decisions come down at all levels.
It's a great question, because one, that's going to show how, the thought process of the leadership team, but two, it's also going to give you insight into their communication, right? And at the end of the day, we know every time you, almost every time that you look at a problem inside your personal life and professional, you know, it boils down to communication, some breakdown in communication. And we're human. It's always going to happen, right? We're always trying to improve communication. But what you're looking for in the answer to that question is, are they intentional about their communication? Are they thoughtful in saying, okay, we're rolling out this plan. How are we going to communicate it? Who are the stakeholders? How do we want the message to be received, versus just slapping together an email and shooting it out to everybody, including people who don't need it, right? So it gives you good insight into communication.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, so here's my question though. And I think this is always really difficult to tell, so I don't know if there's an answer to it, but you know, this idea that input is taken, right? Especially as an employee coming in, most, if not all employees want to know that their input will be considered and acted upon, right? As decisions higher up get made. But as you and I know, the higher you are, the more you've got an eagle eye view, and sometimes right. your decisions can't necessarily take in the input of the employee. So as a candidate at an interview, like what perspective, or like how might you approach this whole idea that when you ask that question, inevitably the candidate might feel like, well, is my input going to be taken into consideration? Like, how can they view that in a way that can be beneficial for them and the employer?
So you make a good point. You know, as your organization grows and as feedback increases, it's hard to get back or you know, take it all into account. Your direct supervisor, your direct leader is really the one who should be that communication channel or portal. Mm-hmm. And what I encourage employers to do, and this is the expectation that they need to set with employees as well. You want team member feedback, right? You want their ideas. You want them to come up with new things, because they're the ones doing the job every single day. And if they have a way to improve it or an idea to service a customer better, whatever that is, we want that information to flow. What happens is when it, you know, seems to go into a vacuum, an empty vacuum, and the employee doesn't hear anything back, they go, well, I guess my input doesn't matter. I'm just going to be quiet, do my job, and I'm not going to contribute anymore, mm-hmm. which we don't want that either. So balancing the expectation, and what I tell employers to do is when you get feedback that you can't use, mm-hmm. that's okay. Just communicate very quickly. You know, it only takes a minute or two. We got it. We can't use that idea today. Mm-hmm. We might be able to in the future, or we might be able to spin that idea into something else, but know that we've heard your idea, and, you know, and give them a little bit of insight as to why the idea can't be implemented or shouldn't be implemented today. Mm-hmm. Right. And yes, it takes time, but it goes back to that intentionality of communication.
Absolutely.
So,
and the why,
mm-hmm.
why seems to be the question that often isn't answered. And I think in some cases it's very complicated and it's understandable. And in other cases, it's sort of this, you know, and I'll get the emails, I'm sure. But in some cases, it's like, I don't have to explain myself to you. And so that's the piece where it just becomes a little bit difficult for employees to continue to give, mm-hmm. especially, again, when we go into anybody that's going into knowledge work that's, you know, needs to be innovative as part of their job. It's sort of like the social contract has been broken. And so now you're not going to get as much out of your employee, but it's such a fine line, right? Because
it is.
You can only do so much to explain the why from a perspective where, in all honesty, sometimes upper level management has information that can't be shared at that moment. And so it, you know, it's just such a dance.
Yeah. And that's where employees need to understand that side of it as well, right? It's a balance, mm-hmm. right? Employees need to understand that, you know, just because I give an idea doesn't mean it's going to be taken or implemented, right? I mean, yes. So it is a balance.
It is. It is. Wow. That's good. All right. Let's see. I think, are we on your question?
Sure.
All right. Let's go.
All right. The other question that I encourage employers to be prepared to answer is for a candidate to ask, you know, what is the vision of the organization? What are the core values of the organization? And how does my role fit into fit into that? How does my role help fulfill that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's important, you know, again, like I said earlier, compensation, extremely important, no argument, but we know we're all looking for something just a little bit more than that, right? We want to know that what we're doing, there's a why behind it. We're doing something beyond just making a paycheck. And so understanding how my new job fits into the big picture, how I can contribute to whatever we're doing, to whatever our mission is, it's important to understand that in that process of, do I want to work here?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to see what, you know, you mentioned the importance of that role is to figure out, you know, for better or for worse, guess what? This is part of your negotiation chips, right? You want to ask about the challenges of the company. You want to ask what the company really wants. And if the company really wants something that you've done previously and have had great success in, or that you have a skill set in that's relatively rare. Now, when you go into the offer, if it's what you expect, okay, fine, right? But like most people, we all want to negotiate, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is where you can kind of say, well, you know, throughout this process, and this is why you don't negotiate your salary before the interview.
Right.
Interview, and you say, throughout this process, I've learned that one of the biggest challenges you have, or one of the biggest, you know, visions that you have for this program is XYZ. And I happen to have the skill set and this experience that I can bring to the table. And I know that it's going to move your bottom line by, and you know, if you know your field, you probably can give a rough estimate of what your work is going to be valued. And then that's where you can, you know, say, well, this amount that I'm going to be making for the company is plenty in comparison to, I'm only asking for XYZ more in my salary. And so that'll give you a little bit extra leverage there.
There you go.
Very cool. Let's see. These are great questions. And I think they really help candidates to see kind of that balance of being reasonable as you're asking questions. It's not an interrogation either, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, exactly. Yes.
This is a dance. It literally is a relationship. I think a lot of times we see, and social media loves to do this, right? Loves to do this, kind of say there's a good guy and a bad guy. Like, oh, the employer never does XYZ, right? Or the employee never does XYZ, just as a way to get more views or yeah. whatever.
Clickbait.
But yeah, clickbait, right? And so part of like what I always tell folks is like, you know, there is a person on the other side of this and there's room for miscommunication, but you want to come into it knowing that if you get hired, this is a relationship you're building. Like you're going to be working right. with this person. So you want to, you know, put forward that, give them the benefit of the doubt and put forward your positive side, not the cynical side right. that we all have.
Fair statement.
Oh, that's funny. Let's see. And I think I'm going to wrap it up with my questions there because the next question I had was actually about the growth trajectory and expansion plans, which is very similar to the vision question, I think. I think we did a good job there. But are there any thoughts that you have as far as, you know, having the employee and the employer come to the table and going through that selection process, now knowing that they are both going to have the expectation that it is kind of like, you know, do you want to hang out with me? Well, I don't know. Do you want to hang out with me? You know, like, yeah. So are there any final thoughts that you have on that?
Yeah. Like you said, it's at the end of the day, it has to be a mutual decision that coming together and working together makes good sense. Mm-hmm. Right. And for the employer to remember that once that decision is made and it's a yes, it's a commitment mm-hmm. and vice versa, right? Once that candidate says yes, it's a commitment on their part. Right. So from that point, they just have to keep the communication open and going.
Yeah. That's easy.
Yeah. Right? Well, academically speaking, simple. Yes.
It's simple, but it's not easy. That's no. There it is.
Well said. Well said.
It's not easy. Oh, I'm sure it's a quote. It's not. Definitely doesn't originate from me. I'm sure it's a quote. But this was great. This was great. So at the end of the day, all these questions that we've been offering for employees or candidates to ask and for employers to be ready to answer, these questions are just in an effort to better understand each other, to arrive at that offer in a way that everyone is happy with what the other is offering, and just to make sure that there is less turnover, which is bad for both
mm-hmm.
the employer. Cool. Are there any final words that you have to share before we wrap up here?
Any final words?
If something could be heard around the world in the next
week. Oh, that's going to be a big statement.
No pressure.
At the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of employers out there. And so if you're on the candidate side, and if you can afford to be selective, right? Because we only have so much time. And to spend, you know, even a year at a bad employer that's got a dysfunctional culture, poor leadership, no vision, right? You're never going to get that year back. You might learn some things about what not to do or whatever, but you'll never get that year back, you know, and it'll burn you out. So if you have the opportunity to be selective in the type of, in the company, you know, be very clear about what type of culture you're looking for, understand how you work best, and try and find that type of organization to go work for, because at the end of the day, you'll be much happier and your career will thrive much more. That's my two cents.
Encouragement. I love that. Nothing left to share after that. That is going to close out our episode today, everyone. Thank you so much, Brian, for hanging out with us.
It was fun. Thank you for having me.